now tuned into the Musky Fishing Greatest. Turn the bass up to my headphones.
If you're casting like a pimp, go on, pull them weeds off. Ladies pimp too, go on, rip them weeds off. Muskies is crazy, don't forget your boy, the bad and musky shoulders. What?
Musky 360 Records presents the greatest hip-hop songs of musky fishing!
So round, it's like out there. I mean, gross. Look, she's just so black.
I like big baits and I cannot lie.
And other boats can't deny. When you're bringing itty bitty bait, cast it out, I'll laugh till the end of time in your face.
How much would you pay for the greatest hip-hop songs of musky fishing? $4 million, $5 million, it doesn't matter!
As I troll through the channel at a 10-foot depth, I take a look at my lure and realize there's nothing left. Cause I've been trolling and casting so long that even my mama thinks that my mind is gone. But I ain't never hooked a pike that didn't deserve it. Maybe fishing with a sucker, you know that's unheard of. You better watch how you're trolling and where you're going, or you and your homies may find yourself rowing. I've been spending most our lives trolling in a musky paradise. Been spending most our lives trolling in a musky paradise. Been spending most our lives trolling in a musky paradise. Been spending most our lives trolling in a musky paradise.
Folks, welcome to the Musky 360 Podcast, Jay Bird.
Hey, Steve.
Are you a hip hopper, a bebopper?
Right on.
That was rather gangster of you.
Well, it's just a teaser. I mean, people can't handle the whole J debut rap album in one time. It'll just blow their heads off.
July 15th, Musky Shop Bash. You can pick up the whole thing. And
I'm going to be dropping the mic.
DJ Tommy Fresh.
Yeah, he's my backup band. Wicca, 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 wicca. He's the best. The best in the biz, as they say.
He'll be doing the wicca wickies.
Waka, 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 waka. Yeah. Waka, 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 waka. Oh, yeah, yeah. What else is going on?
Meat grinders are back. A couple of them. Mm-hmm. Not all of them. They sent those.
Yep.
Other than that, nothing too crazy. Nothing too crazy going on. We got some meat grinders. We got the bash coming up. Jay, it is what? Today is the 9th. The bash is?
15th, this Saturday.
Wow.
Hard to believe.
Time flies when you're drinking Pepsi.
That's right.
I don't even know. I don't even know what planet I'm on most days, Jay.
Yeah, me either.
Speaking of not knowing what planet I'm on. Did something stupid this week.
So, you did. Please tell. Always,
I went on. So there's some guys out of Illinois. They have a podcast called Weekend Wild. Weekend and the word wild.
Weekend
Wild.
Wild. Okay.
I'm going to put it on the app. So they're getting it done. It's a couple brothers. And I went on there. I went on there with Booker. Me and Booker riffed. And then they got me by myself. Completely unedited, so I apologize. So if you want to hear me unedited, there you go.
Ouch.
Ouch. Check in Weekend Wild. It's the Weekend Wild podcast. Cover your ears. So, it's like when I call Jay on the telephone. I'm just like, horrible thing. Yeah. So yeah, they're going to be contributing a little bit to the app here. So it's the Weekend Wild podcast. If you can't find it, check out the Muskie 360 app. I'll have it up there.
Okay.
Our podcast, the Muskie 360 podcast, will be at the top, but look just below it. You'll see the Weekend Wild podcast, and we're going to do some stuff with those guys in the future, Jay. Anyway, July 15th, what are we expecting?
Well, it's not going to be chaos. It's just going to be pure fun is what it's going to be.
Massive so fun.
For those that don't know, don't worry about parking. It's free. We got it. We got you covered. Don't worry about admission. It's free. And chances are you're going to probably walk away with a cool free raffle. We're giving away a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. A lot of our great vendors and people that we the buyers stuff from, you know, there's gonna be factory reps from I think over 20 companies there, maybe over 24.
Wow.
Yeah, so you know, we'll be raffling off rods, reels, a lot of lures, some tackle boxes, and of course there's gonna be food. There's gonna be food and drink there, so got you covered there. Fred, Chef Extraordinaire. Wieners. Yeah. Brats and burgers and all that jazz, and cool. And not to mention Musky Fight Juice will be there, so well, you can get guys, your limited can there
if you're ready to get amped up. Musky Fight Juice, this year's exclusive energy drink of the Musky Shop Bash, will be there. I'm kind of excited. Duff's coming, right?
Yes, as far as I know, he's gonna make it. Yep,
he's gonna be freaked out of how bad I geek out on him.
Duff is he makes supernatural baits, the headlocks and the matlocks. So
Joey,
and rumor has it he's bringing some cool custom stuff that he has not brought to any of the shows or anything.
Joey
he's got
B
laying around,
will
so.
Be there if you want to meet Joe Booker.
Yep,
mm-hmm. He'll be there. I'm sure Hangers On will be there.
It's gonna be great.
It'll be good. And then you got Chaos. You got some other stuff coming on. Me and Jay will be there. Steve Herbeck will be there. So, and then we've got some bass mastering going on there as well. That'll be very cool. So it's going to be interesting. Just a fun time had by all, Jay. Free mm-hmm. of charge.
Yep. Starts about 11 o'clock. So, and I think we're going to roll the power panel, including you, Mr. Stephen Paul, at noon. Noon.
We'll see what that does.
Central. So Monaco, anyway. Wisconsin.
Guys, I've got a big week planned. I have to leave home, and I have to be up in Jaybird's location. So the rest so the rest of July, Jay, going to be live from the Muskie Shop and then live from Canada.
Muskie Shop Studios and then Canada. You got a permit to broadcast from there?
No, but don't
tell
don't tell anybody.
No, you don't want to tell anybody.
You don't want to tell anybody how that works.
You'll get
out.
Shut down.
Shut her down there, boys. You
shut
gotta,
it down
you,
now.
You got a Canadian there podcast permit there, eh? What are you doing there, eh?
So. Boy, I tell you, in just a couple days, you got to drive to Wisconsin, and we're going to fish every day.
Every
day. Well, we're going to try to. We're going to try to fish every day. I can't wait.
What are you going to do, you know? Terry. Coming to Minocqua mid-July for an annual muskie trip. Been listening to the episodes about summer patterns and bait choices. Can you talk about the difference between A1 and A2 lakes? And from your experience, if you see a noticeable difference in them? Wow. That's a Jay question. How about it, Jay?
Well, the whole debate, you know, the A1 versus A2. A1, don't they classify that as abundant? And A2 is...
semi-abundant.
Somewhere in between, but trophy potential. I don't know. I don't know what that classification is actually to be. I think
either
that's correct.
Either of them are good. I mean, the thing is this, what we've learned, to be honest with you, those classifications are moderately antiquated. There's so many lakes that they're not checking them every year.
Oh, no, not exactly. You can't take that. You got to take it with a grain of salt because these are general classifications that, you know, some of them are decades
very
old,
general.
I believe.
Some of your lakes that are like action lakes. Yeah, they're action, but there's Donkey Kongs in there. So what you got to do is look at, I'd say, the overall acreage. You look at the topography of the lake and you go, is this a trophy class lake to my eyes, right? they might go out and do a shocking study or whatever it might be and classify it one way, and then 7 years later, nobody's been on it from the DNR. They're not doing it every year, right? I think anyone that's an A1, A1 and A2 are good. You're going to be there, right?
Yeah, you know, another important factor would be look at recent, if you can find any recent, if you can find any stocking data, whether it be the DNR or the club, because that doesn't happen widespread that much in our neck of the woods. It just doesn't. And look at harvesting, tribal harvesting results too.
Yeah.
That can point you towards just like, well, you know, if there's a lot of muskies that were registered out of a certain body of water, you know, the last couple of years, might have an impact, especially if it was a small lake, on your fishing. So,
yeah, you'll have that. Cam, hey guys, I'll start by saying next level muskie fishing is incredible. Wow. Thank you. Congrats, Steve. An awesome job. I appreciate it very much. Also enjoyed stopping by the shop last weekend and talking with Jay. Always a great time. Looking forward to the bash and getting down to fish with Steve later in the year. My question is simple. I was wondering, how do you step up a game plan for fishing rather under pressure bodies of water at a very pressured time? Okay, so
sure,
we don't have a lot of pressure, but we have a very pressured time, i.e. boat traffic and holiday traffic. Okay, so it's not fishing pressure, it's boating traffic, right? I've not seen a scenario where you can't get one out just based on boat traffic, right?
Yeah. Two different things. I like where you're going with this. Go ahead.
So fishing pressure is one thing, boating traffic's another. Yes, it will shift things. Yes, the extreme shallows might be out, but if you're fishing mid-depth things, you're fishing positive structure, you're fishing the outside edge of cover, you're probably going to be okay. So my game plan on heavily pressured waters, i.e. boat traffic, outer edges, the extreme ends of points, the outer edges of humps and reefs, I'm going to be looking at those.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, and it's very rare that you're going to see that midday doofish stuff, right, Jay? Oh, I'm going to take my jet ski. Those people are done an hour before sunset. So it's really going to affect your midday pattern. Now, midday fish are generally holding deeper, so it shouldn't affect them as far as their staging area. So I would look at it structurally and go, where can I be that's kind of a mid-depth area if I have heavy boat traffic? Anthony, Steve, thank you for picking my stupid email as a winner for Livingston. Got to hold him. Eric said he was going to send me 30 pounds of raccoon jerky. So Anthony won that contest. Yeah, I saw that. He follows up, is there going to be a 12 or 13 inch Titan? We're in the works with that. I'll let you know very shortly. We're going to see. It's a possibility, right? You know, it's just one of those things, Jay. You can't have a billion of them. You know? What do you do? All right. Let me keep going here. I'm combing through them, Jay, as we go here.
There's a bunch.
Nick, sup, guys? I'm a rigger out on... Okay, I'm not going to say your leg. I mostly fish the river system where cold creeks flow into our midsummer lake on hot days. However, the local spots get pounded day in and day out. To get away from the pressure, would you run out of the big lake? So this guy's fishing in Wisconsin Lake that has a colder stream flowing into it. It's getting heavy cool. pressure. I'm not going to name anything so we don't burn it anymore, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the influx, if it's getting heavy pressure... He said, would you run out to the Big Lake and troll, or would you try and cast the river channel edges with humps? He said, it gets a heavy pressure from walleye fishermen. They're trolling all over. Have a Pepsi for me, as I will for you, tight lines. So boat pressure is one thing. Angling pressure is another, right? By mid-July, assume all the shallow fish have seen a bait. What I would do is... start fishing the inverse of everyone else. If they're casting in, cast out. Right? That's tip number one. If the walleye guys are going upstream, yeah, go upstream, but target these things with bigger baits. If that's not working, troll the open water. So at a certain point, pressure will negate any shallow water bite. And I'm talking serious angling pressure. So if you got guys that are making one long cast in, position two behind them or position on the same break they're on and cast out and see what you can pick up. That has never failed me, Jay. Sort of fishing the backwards of all the pressure. What do you think?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well, we've seen that up north, you know, I mean, you know, we're out, we're fishing on weekends, you know, it's not like we're fishing, you know, Tuesday mornings right. in the Northwoods. We're out Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and that's in July. And that's about as peak as you get in terms of the amount of people up here.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of pleasure crafts. And like you said just a minute ago, that is the program.
Wasn't it the program
to get out a little bit. And it's just your, like.
Isn't that your band's name, Jay?
The program?
Mm-mm. Pleasure Craft.
It's just called DJ Tommy Fresh and the DJ Bird. DJ
Tommy Fresh. Kyle. Hey, Steve. I have a specific bait question for you. What are you using for replacement tails on meat grinders? Third fish into using it, and the tails are gone.
Oh, I've got one right here.
Action Plastics. Lay it on them, Jay.
Let me get my meat grinder right here. Yes, sirree. That's an Action Plastics Magnum Grub. Cut down, I'd say, probably cut about a half inch, maybe an inch off the top.
Mm-hmm.
Fire it right on there. Bingo. Huge vibration. Big ribbon tail on those things. Really cool.
And if you don't have that, I don't think you can go wrong. You know.
Yeah, if you can't find it, you know, another right. something close would be a Kalen's Octagombo. That would get the job done too. They're about the same size, big ribbon on the back.
You know, I would any of them work. I like the stock tail, which is the Action Plastics. You can message Don at Figure 8 Baits will help you out. But any big grub, and if you notice on the meat grinder, that tail is pointed down, and it matters. Jordan, my friends and I are going to Lake Vermilion September 3rd for 6 days. We've had a planning session and picked out areas on the map to try. What are some tips or info for the lake? I've seen info suggesting with a popular caller there. We'll be there fishing out of my low stinger 18A. Casting is the plan. Blah, 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 blah. Definitely the biggest trip of my life. I want to try and gather as much information as possible to have a shot at success. Okay, Vermilion. So, definitely a popular lake. Definitely a big fish lake. Definitely a shield lake.
Yeah.
It is a Canadian shield lake that just happens to fall in the U.S. So, we need to look at our map breakdown. Obviously, a focus on the littoral zone, the shallow stuff, right? However, September, weeds might be drawn back. However, more importantly, muskies might just simply be off of reefs and humps. So, I would have two game plans. Shallow casting, right? But I would also have a very serious hump, reef scenario lined up where I'm going points, reefs, humps, anything that is a structural anomaly that breaks up deep water. I'm going to have it marked on my map. I'm going to have a game plan for that. Now, the game plan casting is going to be tubes. It's going to be bulldogs, medusas. It's going to be, you know, Livingston lures, pounders. It's going to be heavyweighted titan, something that runs slightly deeper and suspends and has some hang time, right? Depends on the seasonality. You might find them up in the skinniest of skinny stuff. You might find them on the furthest outside break, but you just might find them that time of year on the rocks and on the humps.
Yeah.
So, you know, Jay, what else pops in your head as far as like reef, hump, rock baits?
Well, topwaters can be very effective on vermilion that time of the year. Like,
well,
that
if they're up nasty shallow.
If they're up. Yeah, we're talking on top of the reefs, but mm-hmm. yeah, off the reefs. So, I mean, plastics, like you mentioned, are the game plan, and guys start to go to the big sizes on stuff too, like Magnum Bulldogs, Husky Medusas. They're throwing bigger profile stuff. Not to mention trolling huge baits too. Matlock.
And I'm sorry we just had technical difficulties, but me and Jay pick up the conversation talking somewhat about moon phase. Here she blows.
I can be on the major on the new moon day. It's I'm there.
And absolutely, I'm not trying to disparage anybody's take on things. Everyone's experience is different. My personal take on it, I'm good. I'll go when I can go, which is every day. I don't take a day off. I can't remember the last day I didn't fish. Jay, can you? In the entire time you've known me, how many days have I not been on the water?
Oh, I thought you were talking about me.
I don't stop.
You're always fishing. Yep. Sometimes you even take your wife out, you know, if you got a rain day. Like the other day when remember the last week's video? I don't know if anyone checked out that scene. How cool that looked, because it was like you had a big storm go by, and you know your clients done, said, "Yeah, we're done. We're good. We got one, you know, or whatever." Yeah. So you go home and Jody's like, "Hey, wanna go fishing?"
I mean,
so you guys went out and you filmed the clothes, and fog rising on the water and the sun's all orange setting.
It was beautiful.
That was beautiful.
Jody caught a 17-incher, though. That was hilarious.
Oh, she said she got a baby. Yeah.
She took her bass.
I got a baby.
She took her bass rod while we were filming the clothes and was not trying to catch a muskie and caught like a 17.
Oh, cool.
You know, from my perspective of this, I'm a very big record keeper. You're going to find different patterns in different areas, right? Pink days, purple days, brown days, whatever. I'm on the water. What I see is weather trumps everything. If you have falling water, you're in bad shape. Rising water is good. Stability will lend itself to some solar lunar pattern. Moving on. You know, I don't stand in the yard and wait for the freaking sky to fall. I don't. Get in front of an active fish. If you deliver to the fish, here's what I'll tell you. And I was talking to those freaking guys on that Weekend Wild podcast, and I just went down the freaking rabbit hole. Like,
no more.
No filter on that, because there's.
That was bad, huh?
No, it was just everything.
No, the rabbit hole. It went deep.
Yeah, it was a deep hole.
Semi? Okay.
Here's what'll get you. I'll give it to you this way. If your patterning sucks, the moon will not save you. Right? If you don't understand the seasonality of muskies, you're damned from the start. If you don't understand how to present below the level of light penetration, you're damned as well. Once you realize that the whole game is presenting to inactive fish, which are the majority of muskies, below the level of light penetration, the moon and the stars in the sky mean nothing to you. That's it. Present to the most fish possible. Present to the most fish possible in the most effective manner possible. And say possible repeatedly and you'll catch a muskie, Jay. In fact, it's possumable.
Ooh.
That's a possible possum.
Bringing the possum into the equation. I like that.
Listen. I got a pink day lined up tonight, if you know what I mean. Anyway, Jay, you know, we talked about in the last couple of weeks, I've been a train wreck. Choo-choo. About patterning and summer things, and we've gotten sidetracked. We talked to Eric. We talked to some other people. What I thought would be beneficial, because I don't want to do any more Q&A. I'm just going to riff here for a second and see what Jay thinks. And you can hear the chair here in the bait cave squeaking because I'm 14 Pepsis in. Midsummer patterns, right? We're coming into July. We're getting warmer surface temps everywhere you go. How do I target muskies when things warm up? What do I do? Right? the biggest tip I can give you is focus on mid-depth brake lines or brakes in cover. And Jay, you've seen that together where we're going, where does the cover change? Be it weeds or timber, right? Does the cover transition? Is there a 6-foot plateau and a 10-foot plateau in weeds? Or is there, you know, 7 or 12 or whatever it might be, right? Is there a transition in a weed line? Muskies, when things get what I would say stable or warm, quote unquote, in water temperature zones, are going to generally start staging at mid-depth. What happens is people do really well late June, early July, and then they start falling off the wagon. I see it in Canada every year. People go, well, July is awesome and August is tough. I love August in Canada because I know where they're at. They're at 10, 12, and they're off the rocks. Just like winter. You have a really strong fall bite, and then you have a dead winter bite, and you come back in the spring. Once things settle in, the seasonality settles in, muskies tend to go mid-level. Now, how do we target mid-level fish? We need to have a strong mid-level game, which is mid-level cranks, mid-level rubber, mid-level glide baits, whatever you have, spinner baits and bucktails. I'll catch fish on bucktails, but guess what you have to do to get them down there? You have to slow roll them or overweight them, right?
Yeah, simple as that, right?
You may encounter, say it's mid-July or late July or early August, you may encounter that shallow water fish, sun up or sun down. However, the vast majority of the time, like I told the guys in that Weekend Wild podcast, you know, if the day's 12 hours long, there's only 2 hours that people are effective. The other 10, nobody knows what they're doing. The other 10 hours, I'm focusing on deeper breaks, sharper breaks, whether it be a transition in a weed line, whether it be a structural transition or a cover transition. I am targeting transitional zones with mid-depth baits, typically at higher speeds. In the dead of summer, they want it fast, but guess what? Speed equals rise, rise in speed, depth and speed. What do I have that can work deep and fast? That is how you overcome the summer heat. Do we take a mid-depth tube and let it count it down and work the dickens out of it? Or do we take like a big Hot Tails glider or a chubby glider from Hot Tails? Or we take a Livingston Lures Pounder, we take a Reef Digger, and we work it deep and fast. That's the question. That's how you get trophy class fish consistently this time of year. The rest of everyone else is going, I know they'll hit a topwater. You might get a follow. That's great. Congratulations. You can't mount a follow. So what are we going to do to target trophy class fish during the middle of the day, during this peak summertime? If you look at, say, like a Steve's meat grinder, right? The knee-jerk reaction is going to throw that to the shallow cover, right, Jay?
Probably. Okay. Yeah,
throw it to turn the handle.
It's a spinnerbait.
Oh, well.
Yeah, throw it up there.
Throw it and count it down and let it helicopter. Rip it up. Let it fall. Rip it up. Let it fall. And you go, why would I do that? Well, if you look at, say, like a tube, right? What do we do with the tube, Jay? We rip it up and let it fall, right? Falling bait, mid-depth falling baits, spinner baits, tubes, rubber. Now, I bring up the spinner bait, the Steve's meat grinder, for the sole purpose of the blade speed on the fall. So let's say we're a savvy musky angler and we realize Steve's saying the truth and I've done it before and I've caught mid-depth fish. You know, if you're on the fence, you'll get over it at some point because you'll realize I'm right. But let's say we already figured out, okay, we need mid-depth targets most of the day. What do? So we got tubes, we've got weighted rubber, and we've got crankbaits. Now, crankbaits really get left alone in the summer because of vegetation, right? you know, you don't want to throw a depth rater at a weed bed. It can be messy, or a pounder, or whatever it might be. So I bring up spinner baits, especially the meat grinder, as an alternative to rubber, because we can control the rate of fall far easier than we can on rubber baits, right? So
yeah,
let's say we throw a Steve's meat grinder and we jig it up and down, yo-yoing motion, contouring a weed edge, and we get a follow, but we don't get a eat. We throw back, say, a tube, we do the same thing, nothing happens. You could theoretically take a spinnerbait, like a Steve's meat grinder, take the willow off and put a Colorado on and get a slower descent because of the surface area of the blade. Sometimes the rate of fall is what triggers a strike at mid-depth levels. Rip, slower fall. Rip, slower fall. So, just like a glide bait, a spinner bait with a blade change becomes a matter of hang time. More surface area, the slower it falls. That is a deadly mid-depth trick for midsummer muskies, where rubber's not doing it, or you know, we're in such a scenario where a straight retrieve crankbait's not going to do it. Essentially, jigging, yo-yoing spinnerbaits back and dialing in on the blade. So having an Indiana, a Colorado, and a willow leaf blade, willow will fall faster, Indiana's in the middle, and Colorado slower. Boom, you now have a tailoring jig for midsummer contours.
I guarantee you we're going to be utilizing that program next week when we're fishing together.
I just brought a pile of them. Where do you go? You know,
that's great.
We might fish a mid-October or mid-depth red October or whatever it might be.
Yeah, we'll mix it up in the boat for sure. Right? Yeah,
but you go,
yeah,
okay, maybe it's time for a fast-falling spinnerbait.
Mm-hmm.
It's about action. Up, down, up, down, up, down. Now, the reason these baits, these midsummer presentation works is not because it's an up and down motion. It's more probative to mid-depth zones. Now you go, okay, so Steve's saying that a spinnerbait in the different blade configurations can be really good. That's fantastic. Let's say you're solo angling, though, right? A smart solo angler can use crankbaits along these outside edges far more effectively than someone that's running parallel. Right? So if you're really going to dial in, you understand the topography of a weed edge or the contour edge, you might be able to throw a depth rater, a Livingston Lures pounder, and a big fork, right? Avatar, and work deep, mid, shallow, parallel. But the majority of you are going to be throwing in and working out. So be prepared for something that's going to have a controlled rate of fall. The other thing I would say is this is the patience to work primary structure that just happens to be in conjunction with cover. Right. So cover's great and all. That's wonderful. We all weeds, 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 rocks, weeds, timber, yada, yada, yada. Focus in the summer more so on things that are cover oriented in conjunction with positive structure, i.e. dips, curves, humps, points, things that are innately there, because muskies spend the majority of their year mid and deep. Oh, shocker, Jay. Oh, mm-hmm. No. They're shallow. What? No, they're not. Muskies are not shallow water fish. The majority of the year, outside of the South, I'm talking to you northerners, they're not in the shallows. They're mid-depth and deep break. Go beat your head off the shallows. It's called 4 feet of ice. They're very attuned to the mid-depth zone. 8-12 feet, that's home range. Never ices up. It's always there. And the deep zone. So when things warm up and they get a little too hot, and I'm not saying 80 degrees. Don't take it there. I'm going, when forage moves down, guess what? Boom. That mid-depth zone is their main cruising place. Fine structure that happens to have cover. Don't seek cover. Seek structure that has positive cover.
Mm-hmm.
Two different things. All right. That would be my biggest take. What would you say, Jay, for like midsummer muskies?
Well, here's the thing. August? Here's the thing about the meat grinder spinnerbait.
Meat. It comes. The thing about the meat grinder spinnerbait, it comes with a gift certificate for 4 pounds of Jay's ham. Exclusively redeemable at Jay's house, which is located at beep, beep, beep.
No. What I was getting at is that fish are not accustomed to seeing or feeling those blades at that depth.
Mm-mm.
At all.
God bless you. Yes, sir.
Ever.
Ever.
So there's an advantage right there. You know, they're used to that crap winging over their head, you know. So anyway, yeah, no, I like that approach. You know, it's not like you have to crawl the thing. You know, yo-yoing can be, you know, attained once the thing's counted down at a moderate speed, and that's fine. You know,
I don't care. Dude, don't make it about, you know, and I'm not saying you, I'm just saying in general. Don't make it about a meat grinder. That's my favorite spinnerbait. Whatever.
Yeah, there's other deep-running spinnerbaits out there which can get down there, yeah.
This is something I've done forever.
The vast majority of them are way too light. They're even too light to me going. Yeah.
The problem is this, whether it be a meat grinder or not, the key to summer fishing is conceptualizing where the breaks are. I was actually talking to these guys on that Weekend Wild podcast. Jay, I'm on a tirade today. Where I told them, I think the biggest thing that messes people up, and I think I'm not trying to talk about myself, but something I know that I'm pretty decent at is conceptualizing structure and cover. Right? You've got to conceptualize what you're looking at or casting to, right? I see it all the time. People throw and they try to let it sink down. It's right in the stuff. You go, okay, where does this sort of taper? Once you understand the topography of the cover and or structure, regardless of seasonality, you can tailor your presentation to it. I catch most of my muskies by lingering just above cover in the summer months and just above structure in the winter months. So you've got to be comfortable letting your bait get to where it needs to be effective. Right? You were just saying the spinner baits, the meat grinder, whatever. You could theoretically do the same thing with a Poseidon or a swimming dog and jig it.
Yeah.
And contour. Yeah, sure. Right? All we're talking about is contouring mid-depth cover. So, however you want to skin the cat, contour mid-depth cover if you want midsummer muskies. If you want to catch fish throughout the course of the day, contour mid-depth cover and structure. If you want to catch a fish, cast your little butt off at sunup and sundown with bucktails and topwater, then do it for 10 more hours where you'll absolutely not catch a fish, and then you might catch another one at sundown. That would be the game. Right. So regardless of presentation, are we contouring midsummer cover and structure? Now, that's lake knowledge. That is a exploratory action of seeing what a weed bed looks like. What does it look like? Where does it blah, 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 blah. Right. So get comfortable with hitting these mid-depth areas and presenting to them as tightly as possible to weed tops, to the structure. What would you add to that, Jay?
Well, I was just thinking about something that about Northwoods fishing in general. And for a long time, trolling was banned here.
Banned.
I mean, for a long time. Like
illegal.
More than two. Yeah, couldn't do it. And just a
prison.
Couple of years ago, they opened it back up, you know, and it's just like, all the people I talk to on any given week, you know, a very, very small percentage of these guys, I think, ever incorporate trolling with their program. It's like programmed in our brains up here to cast, This is the land of, you know what I mean? This is the land of casting for muskies at sunset, you know, and there's something cool about that and putting the work in and all that. And almost like trolling's lazy.
In some aspect, but it is such
a good tool. Now, everything you were just talking about can be attained on precise trolling runs too.
Yeah.
So it's wide open for that whole mid-depth, middle of the day, or let's just say after sunrise and before sunset kind of program. So
and you know, it's funny, up there was it one per man or whatever, like up to three or whatever.
That's true. That's, you know, true.
Get pick up a homeless person and get, run two. It's trolling is covering water. I'm not trying to talk about the book again, but I throw out this, and I've said on the podcast before, so it's nothing new. The decision between casting and trolling is a matter of efficiency. If you're dialed in on a midwater bite with a very precision depth range, casting the ticket. If you're dialed in on a generality of a midwater bite, trolling might be the ticket. And you can go from there. How are we covering water? How are we covering most efficiently?
Mm-hmm.
That's the question. Once we're outside the shallow zone, dude, and I'm talking baits that run, most people, I set up with those other dudes. If it's a bucktail or a topwater, outside of that, most people are uncomfortable. They might throw a shallow raider, and most people don't even twitch them. They throw them and turn the handle, or they throw a crane or a slammer, right? If it's not the first 6 inches of water, most people are in trouble. So how are we going to contend with the cover and structure of any given body of water? That becomes the ticket, dialing in on that.
Tell me one thing. How do you, what is the simplest, most direct way to recognize this mid pattern in general? When do you recognize, hello, what was that?
That was my phone buzzing.
Okay. Self-destruct mode?
Yes. Ooh. 3, 2,
Apple product.
1. Talk about it there, Samsung turd. Well, you got the turd 24.
I just hit it a couple times on the side and it usually starts working again.
Yeah, whatever. Continue. What is the best sign for what? Are you a Pisces?
Well, just for people listening, it's just like, okay, what is it that's going to tell them besides the fact that it's 11 o'clock in the morning and they're probably not actively in the shallows right now, that I need to search out this mid-depth off cover kind of off structure program?
So again, beating the same drum.
And I'm synopsis time.
No, okay. So in the book, I talk about this given away. It might as well be free.
Well, I think this is a super, super important thing to get dialed in the summer for people.
Yeah, but
is going to help a lot of people, you know, if they can go, okay, I'm going to do that.
What I talk about in the book, and this is something I do regardless of seasonality, right?
Mm-hmm.
I do a 3-spot check. Deep, mid, shallow. Or I can start shallow, mid, deep. It doesn't matter. I check the same 3 places every day on any body of water that I fish. Right now, I'm not just picking random places. I'm picking spots that are prime structure. Maybe I check the deep end of a point. Maybe I check the shallow part of a inside turn or whatever it might be. I have 3 key places that I check. Now you go, that sounds great. And if you launch your boat and you go, I'm going to do a 3-spot check. I'm putting my feet up, boys. Don't do some arbitrary check and go, these are my 3 spots. Find 3 spots under different conditions that consistently hold bait. Guess what? That is not an overnight answer, Jay. You will have to do some work. So when things are bad, guess what? This deep point holds bait. When things are good, this shallow area holds bait. when things are moderate, this mid area holds bait, or based on seasonality. Find three spots that you check every time you fish. Find them, work through a bunch of different places, and go, consistently, these are the three places I want to check. Once you get a feel for it and you go, okay, high, bright sun, dead flat, calm, there's bait fish mid. Early fall, this spot always has bait fish. Dead of winter, this place has bait fish. Spring, whatever it might be. You see where I'm going at? Right? Mm-hmm. Once you have the litmus test from your water's forage base, it's easy. Now, you're not going to get that your first trip to Lake X, Y, and Z. You're going to have to put in the work, but nothing that's good comes easy. You have to use structure principles to go, this deep point will have bait if fish are staged here. This mid break is structurally adheres to all the rules of structure fishing and forage movements. Fish will be here, right? You've got to do some work. You've got to use your brain and go, I'm going to find three spots that consistently would hold fish under any given circumstance. So you go spot A, B, C, and A is deep, B is mid, C is shallow, whatever you want to call it. And I watch my video, well, there's nothing deep. There's a ton of fish, bait fish mid, and there's nothing shallow. Guess where I'm targeting, Jay? I'm targeting mid. Now, what you'll find come July and August, especially in the north, man, most of those three-place checks, that mid is cracking off, right? So, if you don't have a three-spot check or you're on new water, scan that mid zone, okay? Are they at 6? Are they at 12? Are they 8? Or are they 10? Scan the mid zone and start getting a feel for it. Now,
and when you say, are they at this or are they at that, what's the size and height of the bait that you're deeming important?
The
pods are great, obviously.
Yeah, but in a whole other tangential kind of thing, right? I don't want to fish where there's too much bait. I don't want to compete against me. But one thing I'll say is this is, I want to determine the maximum height of bait fish on an average, right? So let's say I cruise an area and I go, okay, there's nothing. We're post-frontal, right? The devastating cold front per se. Well, everybody struggles in cold fronts because they fish too shallow. So there's that. So I know immediately I'm probably going to look mid to deep. Huh? Making sense? So cold front comes in and all my friends are just pissing their pants going, they're not going to hit my top raider. They're not going to hit my bucktail. What am I going to do? Well, I'm immediately looking mid and deep. So I might find fish are holding at 9 feet on average, say walleye, sauger, shad, panfish, whatever it might be. So I'm seeing this pattern of mid-depth bait fish. They're topping out at 9, right? The highest bait fish I'm seeing on average is 9 feet at this given moment. I'm going to target 10 to 12 feet. And you go, why would you target 10 to 12 if the bait fish are topping out 9? Muskies feed up, right? So if your highest bait fish are at 9, muskies aren't at 8. They're below them, actively feeding ones. So I'll add a foot or two onto my presentations. That's sort of how I'm breaking that down. So I'll go, okay, my average bait fish on my reed is 9. Let's do Livingston pounders. Let's do tubes. Let's do extra weight of Medusas or Bulldogs that are going to get in that zone. I'm trying to run 10, 9 feet because I assume if the bait's at 9, muskies are at 12, whatever it might be. Wherever the highest bait fish is in the water column on average, not what like some outlier, right, Jay? Don't find one mark. Find like this consistent thing of like they're all at 8. Well, run your baits at 10 because it'd be pretty safe to assume that muskies are if the highest bait's 8, muskies are at 12, and run your bait to 10, which gives you 2 feet of clearance. That's just the way I fish.
Sure. Sounds good.
You know, make any sense?
Makes a lot of sense.
And the other thing is just don't run under them. I mean, there's days where I go, okay, here's sort of my cutoff. And I think anything, I'm just trying to square up. We talked about the solo lunar thing. I'm talking about water clarity. I talked whatever. Muskies can't see for shit. They can't see in high sun. That's why cold fronts suck, right? Cold fronts are not that bad when you're willing to fish mid-depth and deep and keep baits down there where they can see them, which takes long casts and parallel casts. When fish are at mid-depth, it's not that hard when you're fishing mid to deep baits because you're where the muskies are. Make adjustments. I mean, at the end of the day, if we took everybody that fishes musky fishing and we put them in one gigantic arena, right? Say we put them in the Staples Center in LA, right, Jay? Whatever. Everyone hold up your hand if you've ever caught a muskie on a bucktail, right? Almost every hand in the room goes up, right? Hold your hand up if you've ever caught a muskie on topwater. Big majority of the room goes up. Hold your hand up if you've ever caught a muskie on a rubber presentation. Not all of the room goes up. Hold your hand up if you ever caught a muskie on a diving rise. Small percentage goes up. Crankbait, small percentage goes up, right? And if we go through the bait classes, we go through the speed thing, you realize we're funneling down to a finite number of anglers that have realized that we need to have speed and depth control, and the mid-depth fish are the most predominant. Where'd they go? We can't find them. They're mid-depth. They're under your boat. Your boat is positioned where the muskies are, and you're throwing too shallow for them, right? That's the general consensus I would get at, where if they're not shallow and they're not hot, most people don't catch them. For whatever that's worth.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the way it is.
That's the way it is. That's just the way it is.
Bruce Hornsby.
Am I rambling, Jay?
Mm-mm. No, I like the Staples Center reference.
Do you? You're holding. Yeah. When would you? Would you hold your hand up and go, I caught one on a timber.
Is Shaq there?
I go, Shaq's there. He's asking the question. He goes, who's caught one on a timber doodle?
Oh, he's controlling the whole thing.
Right.
And Shaq is in charge.
And they go,
visual here. Okay.
Right. Has anyone caught one on a timber doodle? And you're the only hand that goes up.
Tom has, though.
But then he dunks on you both.
Tom's in Canada, though. So, yeah, he doesn't count.
He doesn't count. Tom just doesn't count, boys.
No, he doesn't.
Anyway, I'm done rambling. I have to get in the car and come see you. Guys, this coming weekend, believe it or not, it has come back around yet again. The Muskie Shot Bash, Monaco, Wisconsin. Muskie Fight Juice, the official energy drink that's not official of the Muskie 360 podcast, will be there.
And Jody's Fight Juice edit is on YouTube and social media.
Right.
So check that out.
There's going to be a special thing here. So I'm going to throw it here at the end. The first person that I see that we did it years back, we did it with deviled eggs, right?
Oh.
The first guy that gets 3 pro signatures on a block of cheese is going to win a prize. Huh. You can't tell them we told you to do it. You have to go up. Like if I see like you have a autographed block of cheese from Joe Bucher, and I asked Joe, I said, hey man, that guy say anything about the podcast? He's like, yeah, he says a podcast prank. No, you have to come up there and be like, hey, sign my block of cheese.
Right. Sign my cheddar. Right.
Sign my cheddar. So that's it. Bring it to me. You have to have 3 signatures. Not mine. Mine doesn't count because I'm in on it. Jay's in on it. Get 3 pro signatures on a block of cheese. And I'm going to make it like the most ridiculous prize ever.
Okay.
That's it. Jay. Well,
we've got a lot of prizes.
We have a lot of prizes. But, Jay, you're the ultimate prize.
I know.
You really are.
Thank you.
Just adorable. Jay Bird, say goodnight.
Musky Fight Juice! Musky Fight Juice, the unofficial, official, semi-official, barely legal energy drink of the Musky 360 podcast. Get turned up! Crank up the volume on your figure eights and make them great with Musky Fight Juice! Musky Fight Juice is banned in the following countries: the United States, Canada, Syria, Croatia, and Colombia. But you can get your contraband collector's can at the Musky Shop Bash, July 15th.
Are you mad?
Musky Fight Juice includes the following ingredients: blood of the ancient ones, the tears of the Kraken, and volcano. Side effects of Musky Fight Juice may include
fighting,
poor lure choice,
Minocqua syndrome,
compulsive bait changing,
and uncontrollable bucktail burning.
If you or someone you know is suffering from Musky Fight Juice withdrawal symptoms, get your can of Musky Fight Juice. July 15th, Minocqua, Wisconsin, Musky Shop Bash.